Well, if we can get full commission approval for St. Neil and Joe and I don't think we have any disagreement. If we desire, I can go ahead and put that proposal to the full commission tomorrow. Okay, is there any other business we should be turning back? Okay, do I think we have a consensus then that we're going to try to get some sort of a summary of where we're at before the next meeting? Everyone is going to submit questions I think we ought to address. And at the next meeting, we'll be spent hammering out some sort of an analysis of possibly what our position would be, at least leading towards that.
Is it understood what questions are that are supposed to
be? They're supposed to deal with temporary, yes.
Is that good in the news? Or is it as broad as the category?
No, I think if I had what I thought the consensus was, we're going to stick with temporary, so we're going to run out. And so the question should be questions that we feel individual members feel ought to be addressed at the next session dealing with the country. Which would exclude them.
Maybe I'm just itchy, but it always bothers me that we have time, which we ought to be doing something, but we don't seem to be doing it. Where is the active discussion in this creative committee of options and alternatives? Maybe it's too early to do that.
Do you have any issues that you want to bring up? Do you think we ought to be addressing now?
I don't know. I have a feeling that we've heard an awful lot of information from various people, and we ought to be getting some ideas at this point. I mean, it's too early.
I think all of us have some individual ideas. So. The thought I just brought up about whether or not we should be thinking about separating temporaries from seasonals and addressing those, making a distinction both statutorily and perhaps administratively between the two types of positions, temporary being a non-reoccurring short-term type of position and seasonal being a reoccurring, perhaps greater in length. At least seems to me to be fairly clear for us. Everybody else doesn't see it that way.
What about the issue that Patton said that how much we can do if the kind of things that we think of doing turn out to be trying to collect a bargaining agreement? Is that a real problem or not? I don't know.
I think you were out of the room. My feeling was that we go ahead and reach for the ideal and then make a compromise from there. You don't cut off discussion or the thought process because I'm setting up a model type of program. Because you may have a conflict further down the road. I think if we pick administratively what we think would be the best, and then you back off from that to what we politically think is the best, that's just my opinion. Others may think.
I differ, and I want to say, for this reason, that to the extent that we reach consensus on something that is more favorable to the great majority of state employees, that adversely impacts one unit, in a particular area, that unit surely would have to argue that they had in good faith bargained a set of circumstances that we were now trying to turn around by legislation. And I just don't know how you argue against that allegation. If I support a particular concept that's contrary to something I bargained with the trades, for example, that's a pretty bad big spot to be in. Yeah, I'd like to maybe, but I'm not sure. I guess what I'm saying is that something like temporaries permeates all levels. PX, the trade, general government, supervisor, we have temporaries everywhere. If we change the personnel rules, the law, the governing rules, we're really talking about the people who are non-represented. That's been our common acceptance so far. In this committee, there is no one not represented, excepting yourself, Thomas and I. His interest, I guess, is primarily the EEO implication. Mine certainly is the system itself. There are no managers here. We talked about supervisory or management implication, temporary hire. Are we really just talking about people who don't have collective bargaining in a temporary? Or are we going to go through, as you suggest, the construction of a model statute, only political reality, we call it, to find that we, with the final analysis, have come to the door now with a model that no one can do legally, probably legally, can't do anything with. And I think that's a basic question. I'm not really not trying to roadblock anything to make it more difficult. It's something I have to live with every day when I think about this sort of thing. And I suggest that the committee might, perhaps over the ones they already debate that a bit in their own minds to see what the scope of this thing should be. I think we ought to have a firmer handle on temporary. But the only place we can really get it is the places that are not covered by 50 bars.
I have a question that I'd like to pose. It's probably some clarification if that can help you. As I read the current chapter 25, this title, in effect, the way it's reading now, in preliminary introductory kinds of sentences, straight to the section dealing with temporaries, saying that the provisions for temporary appointments shall be made within the rules and so on, and then somehow we amend that to expand what we mean by that instead of these conditional rules or whatever in temporary. It seems to me that we are putting the emphasis only on classified service. As I read the rules, exempt people do not fall within the scope of the rules. Partially exempt fall within the scope of the rules to the extent outlined. One of the specific exclusions written under the partially exempt area is that section scope of the rules, section 150, in particular the item 9 dealing with temporary appointments, is excluded from affecting partially exempt as well. So what we've done if we change it is we've applied it only to classified service, which are all in collective bargaining and whatever needs to represent anybody. Now to the extent that partially exempt and voluntarily follow it, I don't know, but the way the legislation is written now, they are not mandatorily part of that and they're specifically excluded from that item regarding temporary. So if we change it as it stands now, we aren't even going to be effective then. Am I wrong on my understanding?
No, I agree.
We could change the way that it affects everybody. I could raise the question I still have in my mind about, does the legislature have the authority to pass a statute that affects changes in provisions like the bargaining agreement? Is that the legislature allowed to? I always start from the assumption that the legislature can do whatever it wants.
Having a fine logical mind but not a legal mind, I'll try and answer that.
I
legally possible.
Probably.
You want to go there. Well, then I guess I'd sort of favor Frank's approach of let's come up with the most comprehensive, ideal solution to the entire problem and figure out what the implications of it are in certain areas. I'll scale back to that.
Basically, to clarify my position a little, it's not, you know, not that we put something down on paper necessarily that it's going to be effective. Somebody's going to yell and scream and the whole thing's going to come down too. But at least we should, in our discussion of the issues, our discussion about almost anything, nothing should be as loud as the discussion. But it comes to the point where we're going to hammer out a committee position. At that point in time, I think we have to put it to reality. And your other question, I sort of off the top of my head, probably can't change existing contracts, but upon the termination of those contracts, you could prospectively change. I think constitutionally, you can't, even the legislature can't interfere with the contractual relationship.
I agree.
I guess my reason for bringing up having people submit the questions is that a lot of these things would be much more productive discussion like 2 weeks before the meeting, even if some of the questions would be addressed. Because I'm constantly where I feel like I'm just busting things off the top of my head and you have to do a little research.
I'd like to offer, if I could, a word or two. You said one thing you're looking for is some of the positive implications of center. You heard some of it. One that came up last session. Us, we've seen how temporary employees, how that rule can be used, can be abused in such a way that people who probably shouldn't wind up with permanent jobs sort of get bootstrapped into them through temporary employment. And we've seen some of that in our cases, but there's an EEO implication to this, and I'd like you to think about it, and that's that if it has worked against the public interest and been abused, I think it can also work for the public interest in the sense that it enables you to do certain kinds of things in the employment opportunity area that are otherwise very difficult to do in the classified service. If you look at some of these other statutes in particular, I forget what state it is, but there's no state that defines the whole EEO program by statute. One of the things they do is to enable a program manager to take a look at the race and sex of people working in a department. And under certain kinds of circumstances, they can say, look, we've got serious problems. And then the rules work in such a way that they can get people who are qualified but are otherwise unreachable into position to be hired. One thing to think about in temporary employment is the idea that you can do the same thing in the existing rules by way of temporary appointments. So that, for instance, if you're not in a position to fill a permanent position anyway, for instance, if it was not available in some such situation, you can do some affirmative recruitment, find them person in a position to qualify.
just possible to certify under federal rules, in fact, it's possible to certify only in minority rules.
Well, one thing I want to raise in the certification committee, I think it's second tomorrow, is that I think we need more information on what the federal guidelines are that is for our options at the state level. You can see them through all this period that the feds have. Kikuyu goes into this in some detail in his paper. The feds really look over your shoulder and certain kinds of things you might want to do with the feds, otherwise they'll probably take away your money. I think we need more information on what we're expecting.
Again, I probably need to start. Finding some interesting things as a reread through the act, trying to determine what that really said. And at the same time, equate the specific personnel rule that appears to be the administrative interpretation of the handbook of what is provided for the act. For example, under the section 050, powers and duties of the director, it says that one of the duties is to administer the chapter and the personnel rules. And it goes further to say that it also performs this particular duty. Then if you go over to another section, section 150, which is the scope of the rules, specifically as it relates to temporary, it says that there should be some temporary appointments to positions in state service which are determined to be of a seasonal or temporary nature. And now all the rules says is that somewhere within its, or the legislation, somewhere within the scope of the rules should make a provision for this, and it sort of makes an attempt to define temporary. But we've got it clouded in this particular case, at least as it follows through administratively, that we're seasonal hanging in there. Now if we go to the personnel rules themselves, which appear to be the fat on that particular skeleton, it says regarding temporary appointments, the temporary appointments shall, when practicable, be made from eligible lists. And if the director has found it impracticable to make certifications, and then it sort of defines what is not practical, because of non-availability of eligible, then you may authorize a temporary appointment of a qualified individual designated, etc. And the contract says it shall not exceed 6 months, except in extenuating circumstances. And then it also says the acceptance or refusal by an eligible of a temporary appointment shall not affect your standing on an eligible list. Now there seems to me to be a real strong implication there that temporaries are supposed to come from an eligible list, except when not practicable. And then the terms of not practicable sort of seems to be outlined, saying it's not practical, of course, if they're not available. Having real trouble getting all of that put together, and yet we aren't appointing them by necessity. It would seem that we should, at least there's an intent there that would indicate that. Then, if you look in the definition section of the personnel rules, they don't define temporary, they define temporary position. And there they have the anticipated duration of less than 6 months as its definition. But yet when they define position, says that is interpreted to mean requiring full-time or part-time services of one person, or a part-time service of one or two persons. And then you get something different when you read what it says about seasonal. And it seems that we have some real conflicts of definition, and there's some problems in enforcement and or administration and or clarity of intent. Something which, if we got into looking at that area, we might find ourselves getting out of the box of abuse that we've gotten into by taking care of some of those things. And it seems like there's an awful lot of avenues already on the books. Maybe I'm misunderstanding something. But when I try and follow through that thread of intent on all of the applicable places, I still keep coming back to the same thing. And I'm sort of going around in a maze on that. We've got some pretty decent structure there. If we can clean that up and figure out some way to enforce it and or diminish it. And that's just an observation that I wanted to put out there. How you get those three all in one set of rules and try and figure it out who's who is who boggles my mind. Maybe we should be dealing with personnel administration here in definitions as it relates to kinds of positions, period.
You know, well, I'm not sure we've appreciated the impact of the Kelly B. Hammer case in terms of what we've been talking about. Up until Kelly, the legislature had sole control over the decision of whether or not a permanent position should be created. And basically, the dynamic was the legislature allocating a certain number of permanent positions and put whatever extra money was lying around to fill in the hole for temporaries. Now, since Kelly, the administration has the sole authority on the legislature. personal service section, you don't have the money to pay for the position that you would like to have, but it's still the administration's decision on how many permanent positions are authorized. And this may create a problem over the long run, because both the legislature and the executive branch have a legitimate interest in keeping the cost of government down. That was the number one concern. Maybe all the state government would operate on nothing but temporaries, because frankly, it's cheaper that way. But there's another side of the public interest, and that's, you know, keeping employees over a long term so they get good at their jobs, and that means offering inducements and fringe benefits and all those kinds of things, which raises the cost of government. And I think, although the legislature doesn't have the authority to approve or disapprove permanent positions, maybe some thought should be given on whether it's proper or the legislature has authority to try to define by statute under what circumstances the administration should have permanent positions and under what circumstances it shouldn't. I suspect that comes up in the context of defining what a temporary position is. One thing we've been hearing is that there's at least a tendency in departments to get substantial amounts of work done exclusively through the use of temporaries, where that's really a questionable practice, but we don't understand that you guide the administration, it's a little wonder what happens.
In the reference to the county parents, it's also that I hear some of the things that said that was in this agreement from Denver, I think you can, in fact,
I think told that you could take the percentage factor and apply it against payroll. A lot of benefits are worth this much, kind of 17% or 18% for the and rival dollar cost. Essentially, you'd be 19% percent difference for payroll.
Of course, there's, you know, there is some subjectiveness, I suppose, in cost savings, but you could also figure that if you, plot it out, that if you allow it to temporary, that the money that was used from the vacancy factor would be returned instead of utilized on a temporary, then of course you have to, you could deduct that from the total amount extra that you would be paying for the, or some portion of it.
They don't even form, and that goes into the debt of bank. And you spend out the bank.
Do you know how many people, for instance, are on payroll as temporary types of agencies, their length of service has been, say, over the last couple of years?
We print each month the data processing prints are going to temporary with the higher date.
Hold the camera.